Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Thank you for joining us on the Cleveland Cavaliers Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts, Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones.
From the Cavaliers Radio Studios in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in downtown Cleveland. Hi again, everybody. Welcome to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. I'll tell you what, Jim Jones, first and foremost, an early happy Thanksgiving to you, but we're going to have some fun on tonight's show. The Legends Chair is actually an announcing legend. Mike Breen, you've dipped into that black book of yours and pulled out a great name in Mike Breen. And then, of course, a lot to talk about with the Cavs' number one pick in the draft, fifth overall, Isaac Okoro.
The thing I like about him is that he is a true forward. And let me define a true forward. A true forward is someone that can run with the guards, do what the guards do. That is the new profile for a small forward. This kid can do it. Now, Cavs faithful, if you think they've been playing fast, wait now when you've got somebody 6'7", 6'8", athletic and likes to run, who can run with Sexton and Garland and Porter and Wendler. Oh, my goodness. Speed.
Exciting times, no doubt, are in the future. So we'll talk about Isaac Okoro, but up next, as I said, really the voice of NBA basketball, Mike Breen. He's going to join Jim Jones and yours truly, Tim Alcorn, on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, right after this.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. What a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining! James catches, puts up a three. Won't go! Rebound box. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds remaining!
Walton can tip it. Bryant with the save.
Oh, you gotta get a shot here.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Oh, my. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Alcorn along with Jim Jones. And, yes, the legendary, iconic voice of NBA basketball, Mike Breen. Boy, the hair on my arms is standing up. I would think all of our listeners are getting some goosebumps as well. Mike Breen now joins us in the Legends Chair. And, Mike, the Legends Chair as part of Cavs HQ is, it's usually been for players, but you certainly are a legendary announcer as far as the history and those iconic calls in the NBA are concerned. So we'll allow you to sit in the Legends Chair here during Cavs HQ. But it's great to have you, and we're honored that you stopped by to join us.
Well, Tim, thank you very much for the kind words. I'm going to dispute you on the legends word. It's clear to me that you guys have run out of quality guests and are now now going much, much lower. But thank you. And when I hear those calls, I mean, those are such fun moments to do. But when I hear them now later, I'm thinking, who is that screaming fool?
Yeah, I've had a couple of those myself, but not to your level. But I do want to ask you, just first and foremost, you know, here in Cleveland, the iconic Joe Tate, wham, with the right hand. And he said it just came to him one night. Where did you come up with bang on a big shot? Where did that come from?
It came from, Tim, when I was a student at Fordham University, and I was doing a lot of the Fordham games on the college radio station. But I didn't start it on the air. When I wasn't doing the games, I would sit in the stands with a bunch of my college buddies, and you know, we would cheer on our college team. And when a Fordham player hit a big shot, I just started yelling it in the stands. You know, it's kind of just because we'd get fired up when our team was doing well. And then I started using it on the air after that. But it started as a fan yelling it when I was turning on my Fordham Rams.
Well, certainly your trip through the NBA is legendary, even though you don't want us to use that word. You'll be entering your 29th year with the Knicks. Is it 15 now at the network level as far as NBA basketball is concerned? Boy, you talk about dreams coming true. This has to be an extraordinary journey for you.
Well, Tim, you said it. I mean, it's not something I even dreamed of. You know, I just loved the game when I was a kid, went to school hoping that someday I could maybe broadcast an NBA basketball, and to be able to to do the kind of games I've been able to do, to work with the kind of people that I've been able to work with. It has so far exceeded my dreams. I mean, I couldn't even think of dreams like this. So I do feel like I'm the luckiest person in our business, especially, again, with when you get surrounded by great analysts. And I have to tell you, and I'm sure he has said it to you, you know, it all starts when you do smaller productions back when you first break into the business. And one of the truly big breaks I had was I worked for a company called Sports Channel America, and I was doing the high school games of the week. And that's the first time I really worked with, like, really quality analysts. And one of the analysts happened to be the great Jim Jones, who taught me so much about the game. And we had such a blast and such a good time doing high school games together way back when. And that really is, those are the type of things that mean the most to you when you get older, is the relationships and the lifetime friendships that you get. And you never forget the kind of experience and knowledge that people pass along to you. And that included your partner, Mr. Jones.
Well, Jim, I'll let you take it from here.
Well, let me wipe these tears first. The thing about Brini is that when we were doing the high school game of the week, that was my first show, and I don't know. And you had been doing college stuff, but we had a producer named Steve Dance. He was our mentor. We cried on his shoulder. He pushed us. He was our teacher, and gave us leadership. We did those games. What was Brini? Was it all summer? We did the best high school players in the country's high school games.
Right, but it was during the winter, during the high school basketball season. Yeah, I mean, they put out a whole, it was every Friday night. We did a game every Friday night.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that the meals that we had were greater than the games. Do you remember those bills? $400 and $500 food bills.
The important thing is the meal the night before.
Yeah, but I do want to congratulate you on your current success, because it's not over, and in many ways it's just beginning, because we don't know where this league is going. But I did want to harp on something that I looked up yesterday. I had forgotten that you had did Olympic games, and some of them, most of them weren't basketball at the time, right?
Well, I did for the Summer Olympics. I did for NBC. I worked the men's and the women's, which was a treat, because it really taught me a lot about the women's game as well, in addition to doing, you know, the greatest players in the world for the men. But I also did some Winter Olympics, and I did ski jumping one year, and that's about as much fun as I've ever had, because I knew, not only did I know nothing about skiing when I got the assignment, I had never been on skis in my life. yet again, I worked with this guy, Jeff Hastings, who was an American ski jumper who was in the Olympics. And Jeff, he took care of all the technical aspects, what to look for. I just would say the skier's name, where he came from, what place he was in, and Jeff would take it away. And it was so much fun, because I learned so much, and I was on the air all that time, and I felt in many ways that I was good for the audience, because I was asking the questions they were asking, because I didn't know anything either. That was great fun to do a sport to get me out of my comfort zone.
Tim, I just want to add to that.
Go ahead, Ben.
Could you see the style of play of basketball, the European style now, and the Olympic style, a little bit different? Could you see this coming the way we play now, based on the way they were playing through those Olympics?
You know, that's a great thought, Jimmy. I didn't recognize it at the time, certainly, but there's no doubt it has had a big influence on the way the game is played now, and in a good way, I think. And I also think that, you know, so many of the European players, if you remember, for a long time when they would come over, you know, they'd had the skill level, but the word was they weren't tough enough, or they weren't physical enough. But it's just the opposite now. They are tough enough and physical enough. And in some ways, playing in Europe, in some of the top European leagues and international leagues, the brand of ball is actually more physical sometimes than it is in the NBA now, because of some of the rule changes over the years. So to see both sides kind of incorporate the best of each of their games, I think has been really, really pretty cool to watch.
And, Mike, before we break, I did want to have a little fun here, going back to your skiing calls. You know, if a skier kind of landed perfectly coming off a hill. Did you say bang when he came down? Was that part of the skiing call?
You know, in hindsight, Tim, that would have probably been a good idea. Although the ski community would have thought I was out of my mind, but I should have given at least one shot.
All right, we're talking with Mike Breen, the legendary, iconic voice of the NBA and also of the New York Knicks. He's joining us here on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. We'll hear more from Mike right after this.
Irving puts it up. It's good. Kyrie Irving from downtown. And the Cavaliers by three.
Iguodala to inbound. Shumpert trying to stay with Curry. Catches. One dribble. Steps back. Puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spades. Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Oh, my. June of 2016. Yes, the shot, the block, the stop, and the Cavaliers are NBA champions. And, of course, those great calls from our guest on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, Mike Breen. Mike, I want to go back to the Kyrie three-pointer. I've had people actually say to me, that might be the biggest shot, single biggest shot in NBA Finals history, when you think about everything rolled into it, down 3-1, on the road, everything. You've called all these NBA finals. Where does that one singular shot rank in your listings?
Oh, it's absolutely up there in terms of impact of winning a championship at that particular time. There's no doubt. Now, I think it's really hard to rank exactly 1, 2, 3, 4, or, you know, with that, but it's in the conversation as one of the biggest shots in the history of the NBA Finals. You know, you played the Ray Allen shot a little bit earlier. That's another one, because if he misses that shot, well, then the Spurs win the championship. So that particular shot determined who won and who lost, at least at that particular moment. But Irving's shot is right up there with it, because if he doesn't hit that, I mean, the whole thing changes. It's really incredible, Tim, how, you know, we do this for so long and we applaud the champions and you kind of forget about the people that came so close. It's amazing how many big games, and Jimmy knows this as well as anybody, how many big games and how many quote-unquote legendary status is put on people, and the difference in a big win and a big loss is often one made shot or one missed shot. It's incredible how that makes a difference in terms of, you know, how you perceive a player or a franchise, because one shot that missed wasn't able to get them the victory, or the one shot that goes in able to put them over the top. It's a very fine line between winning and losing.
Well, no doubt. Jim?
I want to ask you about some of your partners, your color analysts, and one in particular. And I want to start out with him, but there's two others. There's three others that I want you just give us just a one-sentence defining commentary on them. But the gentleman who I loved the most, who set the tone for the way I wanted to broadcast, was John Andres. Tell us a little bit about John.
For those who don't know, John was a longtime analyst on Knicks telecasts with Marv Albert, and then I had the honor of working with him for a number of years. He was a very good college player and then played in the old Eastern League, never played in the NBA, but just his whole life was around basketball. And the beauty of his analyzing was the fact that he kept it very simple. He didn't get into too details. Sometimes he just went off feel and what he felt, didn't always use numbers. And that's, to me, what made him so good, is that he kept his analysis very simple, where anybody who was watching could understand what he meant when he was commenting about a team or a player.
Well, the next one, of course, is my ex-teammate and lived with us for a season, Walt Frazier.
Well, for a kid who grew up in New York as a Knicks fan, and when I was a kid living in Yonkers, New York, I had a poster of Clyde up in my room that, by the way, is still up My mother still lives in the house I grew up in, and the poster is still there. And to go from idolizing him as a kid to then getting to work with him, then to have a 25-year on-air relationship to now becoming wonderful again, lifetime friends, that's the stuff that you just can't possibly dream of. And, you know, he's such a spectacular, was such a spectacular player, but people, the younger generation, they don't know him as much as a player. They just love him as a broadcaster. And again, it's because even after all these years, he still has a love and passion for the game. I think that's what his appeal is right now.
Well, what about who I think right now is arguably between he and the last gentleman I'm going to name, probably the most analytical, smart, common sense commentator I've ever heard, and that's Hubie Brown. What about Hubie?
It's, you know, I get sometimes emotional talking about him because he's become like a father figure for me and for so many others. I mean, at 86 years old, actually might even be 87 now, I'd have to double check. His enthusiasm has never changed, never changed. And, you know, you always talk about, you know, the older generation. They look back and they look at the new generation and say, we were better than you were. He's never thought of that. He has gone with the way the game has changed. Sure, he has his old-fashioned values still in a lot of ways, but he's changed with the way the game has changed. And he has just as much respect and admiration for today's player as he did when he first got into coaching when he was an assistant with the Bucks back in the 70s when they had the then Lou Alcindor and Oscar Robertson. And it's, you know, he has spent his whole life around basketball. He has more stories than anyone. And I just pray that he's going to be able to do it for many more years, because he's just, you guys use the word legend. That's your definition of a legend.
Now, the last gentleman, you two and Mark should have a reality show, but Jeff Van Gundy says some of the craziest, makes sense comments that I've ever heard. I mean, you think about it and say, oh, I know what he was thinking about. Oh, that's what, and then it happens, or else it just happened in the event. But give us something on Jeff Van Gundy, who you spar with continually through the broadcast.
Well, the thing with Jeff and Mark is, I say this all the time, that the beauty of my job is every game I do with them, two things happen. I learn and I laugh. And I think that's the point. They both understand that, yeah, basketball is serious, and when it's time to talk serious and talk strategy, they're right there. And when serious issues come about, they're right there. But they also, they enjoy themselves so much and have so much fun working, and I do as well, obviously, with them, that they think there should be some laughter in every broadcast as well, and the way they balance it. And sometimes three-man booths don't work, guys, but here's why it works with them, because not only do they respect each other, but they really like each other, and there is no competition for airtime. If Mark dominates one game, it's because he has more stuff to say, or there's more things that pertain to what he wants to look at. If Jeff dominates another game, Mark, same thing, will hold back. It's amazing how they don't compete for airtime. It's amazing how they just work so well together. And that's not an easy thing, you know, during the course of a broadcast. But it's been so much fun. We've all known each other for about 25 years. We've all watched our kids grow up together. And it's been really one of the great parts of my whole career, is being able to work with these two guys for so long.
Hey, Mike, we've got about a minute left. I always like to ask one fun question, just so our listeners can learn something about whoever is sitting in that legend's chair. So I'm going to pull this out of your bio. You've completed...
Uh-oh.
No. No, this is, it's a testament to your work ethic and just what you do, preparation. You've completed 3 New York City marathons. That's amazing. I mean, for everything else that you're doing, now you go out and run 26 miles?
Well, it was something I developed later in life. And because I was never a runner, I always played basketball and played full court basketball, played in 35 and over leagues, and, you know, always loved to play. But then as you get older, you can't do it. And from health purposes, I needed to continue some kind of running. And I had a friend of mine who would run a couple of marathons, and I think, all right, let me see if I can try. And I got into it very much, and it's become a huge part of my life. I still, to this day, I run. I don't think I can run a marathon anymore, but and I love to run to music. And so I combine two loves, running and music, together, and that's what's kind of kept me in at least semi-decent shape and allows me to have as much dessert and as much wine as possible.
See, I'm thinking if I took up running, I'd do 26 blocks, not 26 miles. I mean, that's extraordinary. Unbelievable.
Well, the first time, Tim, I ever went for a run was with at the time he was the Knicks strength and conditioning coach. His name was Greg Brittenham. And I asked him to help me kind of get in shape, running shape. So he says, all right, we'll try 2 miles. So I went for a run with Greg Brittenham. This is in San Antonio. And Eric Anderson, the former University of Indiana star who played for the Knicks at the time. And about a half mile in, I was off to the side of the road, throwing up, wheezing, could hardly breathe. And Eric Anderson actually said to Greg Brittenham, he goes, is he going to die? Because that's how awful I look. So everybody starts at a very small level, and you slowly work your way up to it.
That's awesome. Well, Mike, again, it has been an honor to have you here with us. As I said, just this legendary, iconic voice of NBA basketball that we all know and love. So for you to be with us on Cavs HQ is certainly a pleasure and an honor. And look forward, hopefully, to maybe bumping into you this year. But if not, we'll see you virtually.
I look forward to it, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Mike.
Jim,
okay,
I love you,
you're
partner.
The best, babe. You're the best.
Alrighty.
Love to you and your beautiful wife.
Mike Breen, our guest on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Boy, that was awesome calls and awesome information. Stay with us. We've got more coming right up. The Cavaliers tipped off our annual season of giving by safely assisting those in need this Thanksgiving. A City of Cleveland van was used to deliver 200 reusable gift bags to 200 pre-selected families affiliated with City of Cleveland Resource and Rec Centers, where the Cavs recently completed basketball court refurbishment projects. Each gift bag was filled with a $50 Giant Eagle gift card and some Cavs swag. Cavs in the Community, brought to you by Discount Drug Mart. We'll be right back with the second half of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams.
With the fifth pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Isaac Okoro from Auburn University.
14 to shoot. Isaac against Brooks. Crossover between. Step back three. Yes!
And it fouled him.
Dowdy puts it up, missed it. Rebound out of there, Auburn. Here's Okoro on a breakaway against Weatherspoon. Two-hand dunk! Two-hand flush!
And we welcome you back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, Tim Elkhorn, along with Jim Jones. And yes, you heard right there, going back to last Wednesday, Commissioner Adam Silver announcing the Cavaliers with the fifth pick, selecting Isaac Okoro, and then some really exciting calls from the play-by-play voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, who joined us on our special draft night program last Wednesday. So, Jim, let's talk a little bit about this Cavs number one pick. Freshman out of Auburn, Isaac Okoro. And the first thing that anybody had to say about Isaac, including his head coach at Auburn, Bruce Pearl, this young man is NBA ready to play defense.
Yeah, and that's what he hangs his head, where he hangs his head. You know, it's been well documented that he's asked around, you know, people have asked him questions, and he said, I want to make a difference on defense. And that's playing right into the way Coach Bickerstaff plays. Coach Bickerstaff, we haven't seen a lot of him because he only coached 11 games. But if you remember when he was in Memphis, they were always number one, number two, and number three on the defensive end. And that's where he hangs his hat. And if you watch the finals, the teams that could defend when they had to get stops are the teams that advanced. And that's where the Cavs are going. They want to get in the playoffs, and they know to get there, they're going to score enough points. They're, you know, but to get there. And to advance, you have to defend. This kid fits. He's a legitimate small forward, 6'7" and a half, 6'8" with shoes on. He's about 225. He's got an attitude. He doesn't take a step back. And can you imagine, Tim, Sexton, Garland, Wendler, Porter running the break with another young player who likes to run, likes to defend, who likes to facilitate? I just think it's a win-win for the Cavaliers.
Jim, as you talk about Isaac Okoro and all the comments that we heard Wednesday night and during his press conference when he was introduced to the media here in Cleveland, which we will hear some of coming up on Cavs HQ, to work on the defensive end, to want to excel on the defensive end, shows an incredible mental toughness and a determination and a discipline, because most young players want to excel on the offensive end, and not that Isaac doesn't, but to have that mindset that I want to excel on the defensive end of the floor, that just shows you the work ethic that this young man will bring to the Cavaliers.
Yeah, and he's not afraid, you know, because think about it, Tim. The profile for our league is constantly changing. You know, okay, it went from the big man inside out. It went to the Michael Jordans, you know, playing the two guard, getting down the floor, being super athletic and taking advantage of people and pace. And now the league has changed again. It's back to the small forward. Kawhi Leonard, Tatum at Boston, Jaylen Brown at Boston, and Doncic, the kid with Dallas. He's a forward. He's a small forward that handles the ball. We had no answer for those guys last season, just as well as most of the league has. But think about it. If you can get a small forward, athletic, who can match them from a physical athletic perspective, and as you mentioned, Tim, who's tough and hard-nosed, he can make a difference. He can have impact on the game because of his defense.
Now let's talk about his offense, because, Jim, to be upfront, and even Bruce Pearl, his coach at Auburn, said he's got to work on the offensive game, especially his shot. It seems to be somewhat flat, doesn't have enough air underneath it. How challenging will that be? He's still a very young man, won't be 20 until January, but to work with him on changing that shot and improving the shot.
Well, they call it reps, and they call it technique. And technique, and I saw him shoot, Tim. I've been pulling up, and fans, Google and YouTube, you know, this kid's highlights. He shoots a nice shot. At least he leaves his hand out there to give the ball direction. It's just that on the catch of the ball, he needs some work. So it's not a lot of stuff, you know, that he has to change in order to be more efficient in his shooting. And the kid's got a great attitude, so he's going to get better. You and I both have sat on the sideline through practices and watch how they drill
yes.
and correct our players as far as their set and as far as their follow through and where they want the ball to hit. All of that is a part of the way the new NBA is developing because of the youth of these players. They call it development. He will develop.
Jim, one of the things that we heard was Andy Burcham with a couple of dunk calls. So the young man, Isaac Okoro, is really, really quick. He can get up and down the floor. So as you said earlier, you put him in a situation where he can beat guys down the floor. He won't have to rely on that jumper.
No, he won't. And when they do, he does enough of the good things. He likes the offensive rebound. But see, a lot of times the way our game is structured, pace of the game determines the game. But pace can only be determined by defense. You have to get stops. You have to turn that ball over. You have to win situations when it's 3-on-2 and 2-on-1. You got to be able to get some of those stops in order to give yourself an advantage when there's less players in the half court so you can get more open looks. That's what this kid brings to the table. That is the part of the dynamic that he brings to this team.
Jim, I wanted to ask you about the league that Isaac Okoro is playing college basketball in, or did play college basketball in at Auburn. How much can a real tough college basketball conference prepare you for the NBA?
Well, I think he played at Auburn.
Yes.
I mean, Bruce Pearl doesn't play. See, I go back with Bruce Pearl when he was at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, when everybody said, where? And Bruce Pearl got him into the NCAA. I think they won a couple games. But he's a dynamic coach, very demanding. And when you're in his program, you know what you're expected to do. And he stays with that. the thing I like about that conference is the toughness, because it's a football conference, and the fans and the students there, they want to see a certain kind of basketball because they're so ingrained in football. It's a physical conference, you know, and that's the kind of atmosphere and climate that this kid has come from. I'm excited, Tim, and you can hear it in my voice. I'm stuttering because Faithful, go on YouTube and look at this kid's highlights, and then you'll understand what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, we'll give you a moment to calm down, Jim. We'll give you a few moments to calm down. We'll take a time out. And when we come back, Jim Jones and I will delve further into Isaac Okoro, the Cavs' number one draft pick in the 2020 draft. We'll hear from the freshman out of Auburn. We'll also hear from Kobe Altman and J.B. Bickerstaff, Cavs head coach. So stay with us. We'll have more on Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, right after this. Welcome back. Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Tim Elkhorn, along with Jim Jones, and of course, great work by the guys on the other side of the window, Marty Allen, Kurt McLaughlin, Leo Simone. They're really the guys that make all this happen. Jim, you and I are just bit players in this production.
No question about it. That's not debatable. I mean, we have the best, most experienced professional crew that are making us look good. It's like putting makeup on a screen actor. I mean, they put the makeup on, and all we go out there and to do is recite the words.
And of course,
boy, hey Tim, was I grabbing for something?
Yeah, yeah, man, you were digging deep there, my friend. But well said, very well said. And of course, Marty and Kurt were with us on draft night, along with Scott Zarilla for our NBA draft show, which many stations along the Cavaliers radio network picked up. And the Cavs at that number 5 pick in the first round, perhaps surprised a few folks with Isaac Okoro, the freshman out of Auburn. And, of course, Jim and I were talking during the last segment about his defensive skill set already. He's just an elite defender. The offensive game certainly is good, but it needs to get a little bit better, and he will work on that. So, Jim, let's go back to draft night. Because when the Cavs were sitting there at number 5, they had a few options. Still some very solid players up on the board. And we'll hear from Kobe Altman, Cavs GM, in just a moment. But as you were listening to that Cavs draft show on the Cavs radio network and perhaps watching the screen on ESPN, yes, what was going through your mind as the Cavs were on the clock?
Well, the main thing is that, you know, you always have an option. You know, by the time you get the 5th pick, you know, the first and second picks are pretty well determined. But if when you've got the 5th pick, you have some options, and those options usually break down into need and trying to get the best player athletically, usually, and then the third thing is usually the skill set. But the Cavaliers satisfied 2 of the 3. They got the need. And the need was to get a legitimate small forward. The second thing is they probably got the second or first most athletic player at his position in the draft. And that is this kid, Isaac Okoro. You know, that is special because now you went in there level-headed. You know, you didn't listen to the press. You knew exactly what you wanted. But more importantly, you knew exactly what you needed. And we have needed a small forward.
Well, of course, on Friday, Isaac Okoro, along with Kobe Altman, Cavs GM, head coach J.B. Bickerstaff, held a virtual news conference to introduce Isaac Okoro to the Cleveland media. So they all had comments during that news conference. We'll start off with Cavs GM Kobe Altman, and he was asked, sitting there at number 5 on draft night when the Cavs were on the clock, what were they looking for?
I think we were tremendously fortunate that we got the right fit in terms of player and the best talent on the board as well. And that's hard to do because you're always sort of weighing the right fit versus who's the best available talent. And Isaac was both.
So Cavaliers GM Kobe Altman talking about, just as you said, Jim, a fit as far as positional, but a need and the need was to improve this team on the defensive end of the floor.
Yeah, it is. You know, Tim, that's been a glaring thing for even in our championship year and the four times going to the finals. Our defense was probably some of the worst in the league. We were just so dominating, and we had that truly dominating player, that once-in-a-lifetime player. But moving forward, you know, Kobe is and Bickerstaff, Ganzi, the whole staff, you know, our basketball people, they really understand what they need. You know, there's always illusions. You know, there's always pressure, you know, to do what's easy. But they have worked themselves into a position by what they've done before that. They've got Garland, who's a true playmaker. They have a big play kid in Sexton. They got the maturity of Love, who's a tough matchup every night because he can go outside and make shots at 6'10", just like a guard. And then at the other side, now you've got Big Drummond. And Drummond's a tough physical matchup. But the way the game is changing, transition defense becomes number one. If you can't stop a team in transition, either stop the quick shot or else you're not matching up properly when you get into that side of the court, you're not going to beat teams in this league. This kid allows us at the 1, 2, and the 3 spot to play faster and be also put ourselves in position to slow these teams down and force them to have to guard us 5-on-5, where you got help and talking and all that other stuff to support your defense.
And Jim, it's interesting because earlier you referenced the fact how the NBA has evolved from a big man's league to a wing league. I mean, every team pretty much has a dominant player. The elite teams have a dominant player at that wing position. So in the chess match between the coaches, you need that defensive player on your team to slow down that other team's dominant wing.
You're exactly right. Come on, Jimmy Butler, Doncic, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, every team has one who can get the job done for them every night. And if you can't compete against them, get crucial stops against those kind of players, you're not going to make the playoffs. This was the best time for us, based on what the Cavaliers had done previously in the last couple of drafts, and then the trades that they've made. They put themselves in this position where they finally could draft a quality small forward spot. This kid can get it done. He's a super athlete, but he's super intelligent. He has character. It's almost too good to be true. Everything that I've read, I saw the press conference when they did the virtual. And some of the things this kid said, it just stayed with me. Tim, the one thing that he said, and I know I'm going long, but they interviewed his mother. You know, they talked to him on being the fifth pick, and then they talked to his mother. And she asked, what did you tell him? And you know what she said? Be humble and don't forget where you came from.
Right.
I had to get up and go get a glass of water. Well, I'll tell the kids it was water, but it was a glass of wine. But Tim, having a reality that is conducive to being productive. No illusions. I'm not going to be something I'm not. I'm going to do what's necessary. And what's the first thing out of this kid's mouth? I want to help us make the playoffs, and I want to help have, and I want to have impact on the defensive side. Hey, book closed. Beautiful.
There you go. Well, let's hear from Isaac Okoro, the number 5 pick overall. And, of course, he now needs to make that transition from college basketball to the NBA. Here's what he had to say about that.
What excites me is just the experience, you know, being around my teammates here, just learning from the veterans and just everybody that's been here is what's going to excite me. And, you know, it's just the pace of the game. What I got to learn is just the pace, you know, not rushing all my shots or rushing, getting on the court, just slowing down and taking my time.
Was that a number 35? Is there a reason behind the 35?
That was my high school number. And, you know, I'm going to keep it. We were winners in high school, so I just plan on taking that here too.
And Jim, a couple of great Cavs in the past that wore 35. One, Jimmy Clemens, who you know very well, and then another defensive-minded small forward, and Phil Hubbard.
Oh, man. Oh, you've done your homework, partner. I like it. And you know what? But could Tim, in the tone, his tone was confident. No arrogance. just confident, a kid that sounds like he knows what's expected of him, even at this early stage, that's going to accelerate his playing time, his ability to understand what we expect out of him and then get him out there. He said the pace is too fast, you know, so he's got to learn to slow down. And a lot of times when you hear coaches or players talk about slowing down, what they're usually saying is that, look, it's a 48-minute game. You can make that pass. You're going to get another shot just in the course of ball movement. So you don't have to try to, every time you get the ball, you know, force up a shot. That's basically what they mean by the game slowing down.
And, of course, with the draft last Wednesday and camp opening December 1st, that's going to be a quick turnaround for Isaac Okoro. J.B. Bickerstaff, head coach, was asked about that.
I think it's going to be easy because of what he does naturally. You know, our objective is to allow him to play to his strengths and, you know, being able to defend, being able to share the ball and make his teammates better. You know, those are all just part of basketball. We'll obviously teach him our system, but, you know, the way he competes, how hard he plays night in, night out, you know, that's a priority for us. So he does that already. But, you know, we've got a lot of stuff to put in as far as plays and those types of things. We expect him to hit the ground running. And, you know, we'll start as soon as we possibly can with some individual stuff, some film, and things like that to help him get off to a great start.
J.B. Bickerstaff, excited to see young Isaac Okoro in a Cavaliers uniform. I'm excited to see him, too. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, Jim Jones and I will put the finishing touches on this week's edition of Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams. Welcome back to Cavs HQ, presented by Sherwin-Williams, as we put the finishing touches on this week's edition. Again, huge thanks to Marty Allen, Kurt McLaughlin, Leo Simone on the other side of the glass. Jim Jones, fun show. Boy, Mike Breen, the legendary NBA voice, and of course, a lot of talk about Isaac Okoro. We're excited about this young man in a Cavaliers uniform.
Yeah, and we should be. You know, he's just what we needed. And he's the best player at that position, and the Cavaliers were very fortunate. But, Tim, they put themselves in that position by the way that they've made the moves in trades and also in the draft. Thumbs up to the Cavaliers. I love the pick.
Absolutely. Jim, to you and yours, have a happy Thanksgiving. And to all of our Cavs listeners, happy Thanksgiving to you as well. We'll talk again next week. Until then, so long, everybody.